Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Kate DiCamillo, author, Newbery winner, a woman with a soul that sings. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. There's a book we at All the Wonders proper can't stop talking about, and it's one that's going to put its hold on you as well, I think. That book is Raimi Nightingale, the newest novel from Kate DiCamillo, today's guest. We'll be sharing a post every day this week from a different voice in the All the Wonders team. One focuses on courage, another on friendship, a third on sisterhood. But today we're going to talk about the soul. Check back throughout the week at allthewonders.com to see what we're up to and share what ways you and the readers in your life are connecting with Raimi. This is episode number 250 of the podcast with Kate DiCamillo, author most recently of Raimi Nightingale, but perhaps you've already made acquaintance with her by way of The Tale of Despero or Flora and Ulysses, each of which were given the Distinguished Newbery Medal, her Mercy Watson series, or the charming Bink and Golly that she co-authored with Allison McGee. I could go on. Kate's relationship with words and with story is nothing short of magic, and anything else I might try to say will just get all lost in my flummoxing to find the right words. Why don't I just let the conversation do the talking? Here's episode number 250, of the podcast with Kate DiCamillo. Welcome to the podcast, Kate DiCamillo. It is with great joy and honor that I get to talk to you tonight. Thank you.
Oh, it's my joy to talk to you.
Oh, goodness. Hey, you have written books that have touched every life of every reader that I can think of, and I love to see you represented in every section of our library. But Kate, Raimi Nightingale, oh my word, this book.
Oh, do you like it?
I love it. This is, I've highlighted the entire book. And I told Tracy from Candlewick that I was really going to take my time with this because my wife and I have, since we've dated, we've read aloud books to each other, and the first book we read aloud to each other was The Tale of Despero.
Oh.
And that book is magical to me, and your words are magical to me. And this book, we insisted on reading aloud to one another, and wouldn't you know that we finished it one day while we were driving to get groceries or something, and it was just this moment of like tears in the car as we're driving, and my 5-year-old in the back seat going, "Are you okay, Daddy? Are you okay, Mommy?" But loving every moment, and I won't give anything away for the listeners, but we just were reading the shopping cart scene, and it was just it was a beautiful, beautiful moment.
Shopping cart scene. You know, this is, I'm in that position, which you will know, having done this, you know, for a while yourself, and talked to so many writers, where the book is not out in the world, And it, the book is my heart, and you wait, and you don't know how the world is going to receive it. So it matters so much to me that you and your wife loved it, and it matters so much to me that you read it out loud to each other. Sometimes when I talk to a group of adults, I'll say, go home and read to your adult, because everybody hears that they should read to their kids, but they forget that as adults, we love and need to be read to, you know?
Absolutely. And with a book like this, where I feel like you, well, among other things, I feel like you are so poetic in your words and in your phrasing and just in your wisdom that you share through your characters, but also it feels like you're so revealing. I read this book and felt like I'm not just reading characters. I think I have to be reading Kate in some part here. There were just moments that were so intimate that were beautiful, but it called to my attention the fact that there was indeed a person behind these words, writing these words to share with us.
How interesting is that? Well, you know, because I think you can't write anything without revealing yourself, whether you intend to or not. And, but boy, Raimi is the kind of kid that I was. And so you're right that it is me peeling off an extra layer there and saying, this is what it was like. This is what it felt like to be that kind of kid. Although there's a lot of Louisiana in me too.
Oh, is there even a smidgen of Beverly? There must be, right?
There is, but you know, Beverly is more like, and I know you said that you don't want to give away spoilers, but I don't think this is too much of a spoiler. When they're in the nursing home and Beverly goes in to retrieve the book.
Yes.
And then she ends up, is it okay for me to say this?
Please, this is your book, Kate. You share whatever you would like.
It's your book now. That's the thing. So Alice Nebley is a resident of the nursing home who seems to be in some kind of great pain and calls out repeatedly, take my hand, take my hand. And Beverly is in her room trying to retrieve a lost library book. And Beverly is this tough, world-weary, just angry and not afraid of anything kind of kid. Mm-hmm. And she takes Alice Nebley's hand and sits there and holds it and hums to her. And so that kind of kid, that's the kind of kid that I wanted to be, but I wasn't, you know, that kind of brave.
The grit that she has, the bravery, yes, that she has is beautiful. That I kept reading her feeling like, here's such a hard, tough, wizened individual that wasn't afraid to show the love through her hardness. It was a beautiful character.
Uh-oh, is that a baby?
Do you hear my one-year-old making so many noises in the background?
is that one-year-old happy?
Julia is so happy. She's she's growing, and so in our growth spurts, we become very talkative, apparently. And
Oh, yeah. Hi, Julia. Yeah. Hi. You're going to get a story soon, I bet.
Oh, that girl.
Hey, and what's the five-year-old's name?
Jonah.
Jonah.
Yeah, Jonah and Julia are sweeties. And Jonah, being five, has heard many a book read to him, including these books that Amy and I read together. And that's been a neat thing to see that with him, that he's, you know, read to every night with his picture books, and also just understanding the world through mom and dad talking and through reading things like this. And I'm constantly feeling like, gosh, for all this time I spent in education talking to parents about, here are these great habits you can have with your kid, now that I have two of my own, I'm really playing out a lot of them, going, yeah, this is good, I am doing the right thing.
There's no better way to connect than a book. I have to ask you a question, though, Matthew.
Please.
What are you and your wife reading now?
We are reading The Wild Robot by Peter Brown.
And it's a novel, huh?
It's his first middle grade. It'll come out, I think, in a month. And it's cool. It's neat to see. For what it's worth, I feel like Peter, being a fabulous picture book author, has almost written a novel of picture books. Each chapter feels so well packaged, like it could be. I just view it almost like a serial novel. Just these story after story that build into a much larger whole.
Oh man,
it's cool.
So like when does it come out?
I believe it is. I don't have the date handy. I believe it's sometime in late April.
Late April. Okay. Yeah. I'll get a copy.
Oh, it's wonderful. Yeah, he's done a great job. Hey, have you, in the years that you've been publishing, have you practiced, rehearsed, like how you're going to share what a book is? I was about to ask you to share to the listeners what Raimi is, and then I realized, well, I have all this practice talking about it because that's what I do for a living. I talk about books, but I wonder if you've worked on your, I don't know, your pitch for Raimi yet.
I don't have a pitch. It's very empathetic and insightful of you to know that, because I realized when I was ambassador that I don't really know how to book talk. You know, when I'm talking about other people's books, I don't know how to do it. It's not a skill that I have. I got a little bit. I'm a huge reader. And I love things passionately, but to be able to talk about them articulately and concisely is a skill. And it's one that I still haven't honed. And as far as talking about Raimi, you know, so what, we're 3 weeks out from publication, and I've done quite a few interviews around the book. And I said this to somebody last week. I said, in the interview, I said, you know, I never know what a book is about or what I'm doing until I start to talk to critics and journalists. Mm. And then I kind of slowly figure it out. So I'm in the process of figuring out my spiel, as you would say. But I don't. Do you want me to try it on you?
I was going to say, I would love for you to try it, or I'm welcome to try myself.
No, you try, and then I'll bounce off of you.
Okay, Kate, to me, this is what Raimi is to me. And I love the idea, too, that all of us, we take different things and we put in different things to the stories we read. So for me, Raimi is a story about three girls who enter who want to enter a baton twirling competition, the Little Miss Central Florida Tire Contest.
Right.
And they all want to enter for different reasons. And Raimi, our namesake of the book, wants desperately to win so that she can have her picture in the paper, so that her dad, who has run off with the dental hygienist assistant, will be seen. And Louisiana wants to win because it will help her family. And Louisiana doesn't have mom or dad anymore. They passed in an accident, and she's now living with her grandmother. And Beverly, we talked about Beverly earlier. She doesn't really want to win. She wants to sort of stick it to the man, as it were. we learn, has grown up in a house that, she's probably at these lessons because her mom is forcing her to do it. And this is going to be the way for her to exercise her strength or her will. But Raimi Nightingale is the story of these three girls becoming three friends and becoming three compatriots and three rancheros, and what it means to be there, like really be there for one another.
Yeah, it's that. And I was listening to you as you were, and you got all your facts right, Matthew. It was really good.
Oh.
it sounds like it's a really sad book, but it's also a funny book, and it's in the end it's triumphant because of what you said, because they learn what it means to really be there for somebody and how life-changing that is to learn to rely on somebody else and
Yes.
to learn that you can be relied upon.
I agree. And I think that Raimi really has the best line to close the story. And I don't believe this will spoil anything for the story itself, but I think it's such a deep, moving sentiment that at the end she, there's a statement that says, what Raimi thought as they rose together was that it was the easiest thing in the world to save somebody. And when I read that, I thought, it is, isn't it? Because really the way you save someone is by being there and by doing something. And that's it.
Oh, you know, you made me cry reading that.
Well.
because, I mean, and I respond not as the writer of the words, but as somebody who is moved by what those words mean, by that fact. It's,
yes.
That's what it means. You're right. It's being there for people, which takes a lot of bravery.
Yeah, buckets and buckets of bravery. And this story, the other thing I have to give you, just because it's sort of fun and I need to get it out of my brain for you to know, is that the other thing I've been telling people when I've been talking about this book, because lots of adults, I'm always working to get them to read children's literature and keep feeding them, keep nourishing their diet of good books. But one of the other entries I've been saying for Raimi Nightingale is that it's sort of like, if we looked at movies, it's sort of like Stand By Me meets Steel Magnolias in the way that...
I love that.
Oh, good. In the way that you've got these...
That.
This amazing... Stand By Me is like my favorite movie ever. To have these... A kid... centered story where we are going to let the children work through this and find their way through this time that we are with them. But I also really admired in this story that this is really a story about girls and about the women in their lives, and in some cases about the men in their lives. But we really, for my memory, we really see two men. We see Raimi's dad, who is not a good example in her life. And we see Mr. Stephopoulos, who, well, we might see a third. We see
Edward Option.
I was just going to say, we see Edward. I was just going to say, yeah. Where we learn really what it means to have our place in the world and how we can influence others by the choices we make. And so this was, I mean, there's a lot of sentimental moments for me, but for me coming into this, raising a daughter, there were a lot of things I thought about, thinking I want Julia to be equal parts Raimi and Louisiana and Beverly.
Oh, you're going to make me cry again. What a wonderful thing to say. Because we do, you know, all that watching and worrying that Raimi does is offset by the action and ferocity of Beverly and the undying hopefulness of Louisiana. So together they are invincible, you know, because of those qualities combined. And what wonderful qualities to hope for Julia, you know?
Yeah. Kate, I've watched lots of videos of you online, as you do. But I have, because the world keeps pointing me back to you, which is a wonderful thing. But I listened to an interview from Gary Schmidt the other day, a podcast that he was on, and he talked about his writing process, and I think we're all in general fascinated at the writing process, because it's how words come to life, right? And I know that you famously have this writing process that I assume you probably still keep up, that you write 2 pages a day. You get up early, you have your coffee, you write 2 pages a day. Are you still doing that?
I am. You know, it's modified and morphed some as my life has changed, and I'll talk about that in a minute.
Sure.
But I just want to say that I love Gary Schmidt. Have you ever heard him give a lecture?
I have not. It was.
He's astonishing.
Is it amazing? He was on another podcast with Colby and Travis Jonker. The Yarn is their podcast, and they had a 2-part interview with him, and it was amazing to hear that when he writes a draft and then throws it away, and then writes again. To think like he. I don't know the trust that he has in his writing process.
So he's not even referring to the previous draft?
At least in the way that it sounded like he gets out his initial draft, it was just an astounding thing for me to hear that he walks over and throws it in the fire, in some cases, quite literally.
Wow, wow. Yeah. Well, I want to say cavalier. It's not cavalier. I'm not that brave, but the 2 pages, that is, I do that when I'm here, when I'm home, and I do it before I do anything else. And then what's changed for me is that, sometimes I will do a second and a third session. If I'm at the beginning of something, the very first draft, the draft that Gary throws into the fire, which I would be terrified to do. That first draft, I proceed so carefully because I'm trying to get a wild animal to eat out of my hand, So I'm very, very cautious and I don't want to overwork it. So sometimes I'll do that initial 2 pages and then a little bit later in the morning, I'll do a 3rd page. But then when I move into the second draft, I might do 2 pages in the morning and another 2 pages. And then in the 3rd draft, I might add a 3rd session. Does that make sense?
So it does,
A little bit more quickly once I feel like I've got, I've got the animal trusting me.
Do you focus on writing one thing at a time? When you were working on Bink and Golly and this and that, are you doing one book at a time or are you visiting different things?
One book at a time only in the sense that, I'm working on a novel now and I've put it aside. I've got it all the way through in a second draft. So now I will let it sit and what I think of as marinate for a while, and in that interim, at least 2 weeks, I like to leave at least 2 weeks. In that interim, if I have something shorter that I can work on, then that's great. I'm happy to do that. But so that's as simultaneous as I'll get, but I wouldn't put another novel into that 2 weeks, but a shorter project I would.
Yeah, so your rewrite, all of that is all part of the same process. That makes sense.
Yeah. And it's I've always been Rebecca Stead and I did.
Oh my word, you and Rebecca on Phil's blog on Aaron the number 5 bus. Oh my word.
So much fun. Well, and what I was gonna say was, so I'm glad you know that, it's like we did with that, I think we referenced it in there. We did a thing where we were on a panel with Jack Gantos and
yes.
We were talking about how terrified we are writing. And he's like, what are you talking about? He was just like dumbfounded. And I bet you I've never asked John Sheska, but I bet you he would be the same way. He would be like, what? Who's terrified? What are you terrified for? But that terror is, which has been there from the beginning, has lessened a bit for me, and joy is the joy in it is getting bigger, which is interesting.
Well, I'm glad that you're having that experience too, that it's that you still have the terror, the fear to go along with the joy, because there's something quite complementary, I think, about the two.
Right. It's like you need the terror. You do need the terror, I think. I mean, I do. Because it keeps you
sharp.
It keeps
your wits about you.
And it keeps you humbled, because really, for as much as you can talk about process and work and how you do your work, there's still something ultimately that's a mystery about the whole thing. And that you can't explain to yourself or to anybody else. There's an element of the miraculous in it. And so the terror reminds you of that
And I
too.
love, yeah, the sentiment that you're saying about taming the wild animal. I think that's such a beautiful statement in the way that you are approaching this story and going, okay, there's something here, but I want to wrestle with it. I want to grapple with it and understand it, but not beat it into some sort of submission and
Right,
then lose
because
the life in it.
right, it's that thing always of getting out of my own way. Because
Yes.
I feel like the story knows more than I do. The story is smarter than I am and wiser. And so I can't make the story conform to me because it would run the story. The story shapes me. And it's just, it's that thing of every book that I've written has changed me and deepened me.
How did Raimi come to you then? When I started to bring up the videos I've seen of you, there was one that was great showing your writing space, and I remember the camera looking over that here's a Despereaux doll, and here's the porcelain doll that was Edward Tulane, and different things like that. How did Raimi come to you? How did she visit you?
So you, bless your heart, have listened to me talk enough via videos to know that the only part of writing that's really easy for me are the names. So I started with two names. One was the name of the contest, Little Miss Central Florida Tire, right? Which made me laugh.
I
And
know, right?
then I know that the child is named Raimi. And so I think when I start out, I think, okay, I'm going to be telling a funny story about an inept child in a Little Miss contest.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought it was going to be. And I always, I love Beverly Cleary, and there's nobody like Ramona in the world, but
Oh,
Ramona is
yeah.
the pie in the sky dream for me as a writer, right? So I'm thinking it's going to be kind of like a child like that. But then almost as soon as I started to write, I start off with Little Miss Central Florida Tire. I start off with Rainy. And without knowing it, and this is what you always wait for when you write, I think, boom, here's this child named Louisiana Elefante. And then here's this child, Beverly Tepinski, whose father is a cop. And I don't anticipate either of their arrivals. And as soon as they show up, the whole shape of the story changes. And then I think, and then I watch it rotate, and I see here's Raimi, a kid that would never in a million years enter a contest like this. So what is she doing there? Why? Uh-oh. Her dad's left, and she thinks that she's going to find a way to bring him back. So then I'm on a different territory entirely that I anticipated. But I've been doing it long enough now to know that I want to be in a different territory that I anticipated,
Yes.
because that's where all the wisdom is in this story that wants to be told, as opposed to me telling the story.
Right.
So.
It sort of has the experience has helped you build trust for the fear that you have.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
That's it. And trust in the story and trust
Yes.
in the process.
You've had, I mean, my word, you've had so many accolades, especially from the Newbery Committee. And I apologize if this is too straightforward, but just to ask, has that affected your approach to stories? Does it ever get in your head and mess with you to
Oh.
know that we all want to slap medals all over your books? And I'm not even kidding. I am not even kidding.
I can't. It goes back to that. I'll answer it by talking about Winn-Dixie.
Yes.
And so that was the first book that I wrote. And maybe you've heard me say this, Matthew, before about this, but I was working in a book warehouse that served the whole upper Midwest, and I had such realistic expectations for what would happen with a middle grade novel. And what happened with that book defied my expectations, and people felt so passionately about that book that it put me in this state of mind where I realized I was just gonna have to write another book exactly like Winn-Dixie, because that way people would keep on loving me. And I just backed myself into a terrible psychological corner, and that was ultimately where Despero came from. Was okay, if I'm going to survive as a writer, I have to forget about being loved or doing what people might expect of me. I have to go in an entirely different direction and answer for the story that's in my head. And so those Newbery medals on there are so deeply meaningful to me because it's something that I was aware of as a child. But at the same time, it's like a bright light that I don't let myself look at, because then it would distract me, and make me write in order to get approval. Do you know what I mean?
I
And so.
never would have expected to hear those words from you, Kate, but to hear that, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. The idea of writing something so that people will keep loving you is something that there's a lot of things that I do that I feel like I need to be careful because sometimes I'm driven by, well, from people's acceptance and affirmation. And
And it's and you I'm grateful for all of that,
yeah.
for I mean how people responded to Winn-Dixie, but I can't write thinking I have to write and tell a story that is going to make people love me, because it you know so the Newberries are in my second left-hand desk drawer. And I will allow myself. All right, I'm going to do it right now while you're on the phone.
My goodness.
I will
Let me hear
allow
the
myself.
cherub sing while you open it up.
I will allow myself. There's a wonderful scene in one of Beverly Cleary's books where Ramona keeps on opening up a book that has a picture of a witch in it that scares her, and then slamming the book shut. And Beezus is like, "Why do you keep doing that?" And it's like, "Because I like scaring myself." And so, it like there they are. Okay, and that's it. Now I won't look for another 6 months. But
But they're
they're
still there.
there. They're there.
Oh my word, I love it so much. Well, you don't need to hear this from me, but because I have the platform to be able to say it to you now, I can tell you that the things you write, do make us love you and continue to love you more because it's you on the page, and because I think what you accomplish over so many books is something that I think every author strives to accomplish in books, in any one book that they write, which is that you have our trust and you have us with you. And so I know for me, I trust, and I've read everything you've written, Kate, but you have my trust there that the characters will be all right, and that the story, that I'll be a part of the story, that I'm there with the characters, whether that's Mercy or Bink and Golly or Louise or any of them. I'm there with them, and that world that you've invited all of us into, it's a wonderful place. And it's a place, again, when I think of Raimi, that I approach this knowing that I could trust you and that it would be okay, that the characters, we'll see them through to the end, and you'll see me through to the end as well.
Oh, well, that's like the third time that you've made me cry.
I am not trying to do this. I swear to you. I just
but trust is yeah. like that you would trust me is huge. It's huge. So thank you.
I'm going to ask you one last question before I let you go, but I do want to say this one other thing to you about Raimi, and especially for others who are about to read this book and about to enjoy this book, and that is that when, I'll speak very generally, when Amy and I read Raimi together, there were so many moments in the start of your story that I was seeing all of these wonderful details that were painting a picture of who these characters were, what their relationships were, that really deeply made me feel like Kate knows these characters. These are characters that have walked into her writing space and you know, onto the page. But to see those details, all of those details pay off is the way I'll call it. To see them pay off in the end, that is what made me cry when I read this book, that there were these moments that I just went, yes, this is what would happen. And it's what really, I mean, in no small way, it's what made me hold that book and hug that book and say, yes, Kate DiCamillo. So thank you.
I didn't. And at some point, we'll see each other in person, and I can tell you how much I didn't know what I was doing. And it's so interesting to hear you say how all those details come together, because it's almost like, you know, again, it's the story being smarter than me, and I'm not doing it consciously. And I throw all those balls up in the air, but then it's like the story catches them, you know?
Well, I sure am glad that the story catches them, and then your fingers are there to catch the words and put them onto the page, because it's really a beautiful thing. I think Raimi's going to be up there with one of my favorite books that you've written. It's just beautiful.
Oh, thank you. And you making me cry. And you know what you're going to tell those kids tomorrow? Because I know what your last question is.
I'm going to see my library full of kids. What would you like me to tell them from you?
Stories make you brave.
Stories make you brave. This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if the episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook and Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Pseudonymous Bosch has secrets to keep and secrets to share, but not without first talking about Bad Luck, his second book in the Bad Book series. And after that, Sergio Ruzier joins me to share This Is Not a Picture Book, a beautiful new picture book that will leave you thinking about stories and about the relationship each story can hold with a reader. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtimes a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.